What's going on, everyone? This is Nick with Us Versus Herd, and you're tuned in to the very first Us Versus Herd podcast. I'm pretty excited. At the same time, I'm pretty scared. The introvert in me doesn't really want to do this, but we're going to rip off the Band-Aid, and we're going to get into it. The main reason why I wanted to start the podcast is sometimes there's content that I want to do that's on my heart that's not necessarily a good fit for YouTube, and I think that the podcast will really help also give you some insight, more insight on my life outside of options, you know, as an entrepreneur, just as a person. And, you know, we're all in this together, and I just wanted to kind of give you, for the very first podcast, some background of who I am, where I came from, how I grew up, and kind of walk you through the process and my journey, not only as a trader, but as a person, as an entrepreneur, as, you know, as I go through this, you'll get a good idea of what I've gone through to get to where I wanted to go. And, you know, I would say that the majority of my life has been a struggle in terms of just life in general. Didn't grow up wealthy, didn't grow up in I grew up in a nice home, loving home, parents. I have four other siblings, and, you know, I would say that I had a great childhood. I had a fun childhood, but I wouldn't say that it was a privileged childhood. I wouldn't say that, we were doing amazing things. We were living like anybody else and getting by like everybody else. You know, I spent most of my life living in a two-bedroom apartment with my other siblings and sharing a bedroom with them, you know, for the majority of my life. You know, up until the time that I moved out of my house, but I didn't move out of my parents' house until my 20s, you know, as we'll go through that. But, you know, growing up, you know, I want to give credit to my parents that they've always been there for me. You know, my mom and my dad, you know, they've been great. They've always supported my decisions no matter what. And I want to say, like, things did get crazy for me for quite a long time, you know. Not everyone, as you guys know, as you guys go through life, not everyone's going to support your decisions, especially when, you know, they're kind of deemed high risk. And I want to say, you know, what I've gone through in my life so far has been pretty high risk. And it's not for everybody. You know, I wouldn't recommend, you know, just because I live my life this way, it's not necessarily a good fit for everybody else. It's not necessarily a good fit for people with a lower risk profile. But for me to get out of where I was, to get out of, you know, the two bedroom apartment, to get out of my parents' house, to get things started on my own, it took a lot of risk and it took a lot of work. Nothing here came free. And, you know, kind of going back, you know, early on, I knew, you know, kind of when you grow up, people ask you, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to? Do you want to be a policeman? Do you want to be a firefighter? Do you want to be a doctor? And they have all these things that require, you know, whether they require education, time, fitness, whatever. You know, anything worthwhile requires work. And, you know, my dad, I spent a lot of time with my dad growing up. He was an entrepreneur. He owns his own doctor's practice. And, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs to that where, you know, he was gone sometimes, but then he was there a lot. So it was always a balance. And then, you know, my dad would tell me stories about how my grandfather was an entrepreneur. And, you know, they always say, work with your mind, not with your back. And, you know, as a business owner, one thing that I was taught was, you know, through my dad and my grandparents was that you either work for someone else and you get none of the profit and all the headaches, or you work for yourself and you get all of the profit and all of the headaches. So, you know, in terms of entrepreneurship, that really clicked for me. And, you know, I was always wanting to do my own thing even early on. And as a hobby, you know, I would try to sell anything to anybody. Like I would, you know, 6-7 years old, I would have a pop-up shop and I would invite my friends to come by, see if they want to buy anything. And it was more buying and selling things. I don't know why, but it's always been like a hobby of mine. Like buying something for less and selling it to somebody else for more has always felt good. It always has been like, it wasn't really about the money, but it was about the thrills. Like, hey, I found this thing that I bought and you're willing to buy it for more money, that transaction is kind of what fueled everything that I'm currently going through. You know, currently what I'm doing right now, even through options trading and everything like that. So, you know, I don't know why, you know, we're just wired that way, but some of us, I mean, if you're an entrepreneur and you understand that, I don't know what to tell you. It's in my DNA, I guess, that you would say that, hey, why do you get a thrill when you buy something for less and sell it for more? And it's just something that I like to do. Like, making money is a hobby for me. It's something that I enjoy doing. You know, some people like going to the mall, some people like going golf, and none of those things are wrong. None of those things, but it depends on the person. And for me, it was always trying to figure out, you know, for me, it's always the puzzle, figuring out what's next. What can I do to better myself? What can I do to make more money? What can I do to go to the next level? And that has always been something that I enjoy doing. It's not work for me. It's something that I enjoy. People are like, man, you grind out a lot. You must be tired. And yeah, I'm tired, but at the same time, I really enjoy what I do, you know? And early on, selling Pokemon cards, baseball cards, basketball cards, you know, and I was starting to really get the hang of it. And, you know, a lot of people call themselves an entrepreneur. That's like a mini version of an entrepreneur. Right now, entrepreneurship is very trendy, especially like in Instagram profiles, Twitter profiles. Everyone says they're an entrepreneur, but I want to say, like, kind of like a college degree, you can't say that you have a bachelor's degree if you didn't earn it. You can't say you have associates or a PhD if you didn't earn it. And for me, being an entrepreneur, I wouldn't call myself an entrepreneur if I didn't make it. And what I mean by make it is, if you can't support yourself and the people that depend on you through your endeavors, you're not an entrepreneur. You may have a side hobby, you may have a side hustle that generates money, but you're not a true entrepreneur. And people may get offended by that, but entrepreneurship, the title, I would say it's a rite of passage. It's going through the fire, going through everything that you've been through, and doing the things that you didn't enjoy doing to get the reward, you know? So kind of like I was saying, like, your degree, your PhD or your bachelor's, you had to go through the fire to get those degrees. And same with entrepreneurship. You don't just become an entrepreneur. You don't just say, slap this on my bio, I'm an entrepreneur. You have to go through the fire. You have to make it through. A lot of people, most people don't make it through the fire. That's why I say the title of an entrepreneur, that's earned. It's not given. It's earned. So, you know, kind of get after that little rant there. After I started, you know, when I was like 7 or 8, I was selling baseball cards, Pokemon cards. It wasn't until the internet started to happen, and this was before eBay, where the whole Beanie Baby trend started to happen. And I was literally, I don't even remember. I was selling stuff online before eBay launched. So there were other online marketplaces before eBay launched, right? Or let's say eBay got popular. So there were a lot of other marketplaces, and I really grabbed a hold on to the Beanie Baby fad, I guess you want to call it. And the reason why I really grabbed a hold of it is because I'm not going to say that I ripped off my friends, but there were a lot of people in the neighborhood that didn't know how much things were worth. And because I spent the time and I had the knowledge of what it was going to be worth online and what I could buy it for from my friends or from the people in the neighborhood, you know, I was able to get a good deal. So I didn't have a bank account. I was like 12, 13 years old. I was young, and I was maybe even 11. And I was selling things online, and I was selling these Beanie Babies. And I didn't have a bank account, so what I would do is I would then have them send me a United States Postal Service mail order, which they would send me. I would then go to the post office, cash that mail order, and then along with that, mail their Beanie Baby. And I was selling things. I was 12, 13 years old. I was making couple thousand dollars a month. I mean, things were really popping until obviously things crashed, but the thing that that taught me about that experience is, if you have the knowledge, if you know how much things are worth to somebody else, and you know where to get the supply, you know, supply and demand, that really taught me how supply and demand works. So, you know, and the internet, buying things, selling things to complete strangers, never having to meet them, never having to see them, the transactions done 100% online, you can reach so many people. Then, you know, like back in the day, you would literally have to go, hey, you'd have to post something in the newspaper, or you would have to go through word of mouth and say, hey, if anybody knows somebody looking for a car, let me know, because I'm selling one. It wasn't like it is today, where we could post something on Facebook. We you know, with a click of a button, we can literally meet, reach thousands of people, whether they're in your inner circle or just friends of friends of friends. You know, we post something online on Facebook or Twitter, and some people share it. You know, you're immediately in front of thousands of people. So, you know, I want to say, like, as an entrepreneur and going through that, that really solidified early on what having a business actually means and how to run one profitably. Obviously, that fad ended. I continually sold things online, but going into the next kind of phase of my life, I was getting older. I was like 13, 14, going on 15. I was like 13, 14. And because we lived in an apartment, I didn't have like a lawnmower or anything to make. I wasn't able to mow lawns or do anything that kind of work. But what I did was I started to shovel snow with my friends. I mean, we live in the Chicago area. Snow gets pretty heavy. The area that I lived in, I lived in an apartment, but there was very nice homes surrounding that with people with money. And so me and my friends, we would go out, we would shovel snow. I asked my friends, like, hey, you guys want to go do this? You know, and they said yes. They didn't really initiate it. I was always trying to initiate moving things forward. And so I got a shovel. My dad took me to get a shovel and started shoveling snow. And, you know, we were charging $20 a driveway, and we had to split that between three or four guys. And at the end of the day, you get like $5 per driveway. And we were making good money. You know, we were making $20, $30, $40 a day per person. Like, hey, that's great. One day I kind of got tired of that, and I was like, okay, worst case scenario, how much do you guys bet I'll go the next door I go up to, instead of charging $20 a driveway, the snow is kind of heavy today, how about we charge $100 a driveway? And we go up to the door, I ring the doorbell, the guy answers the door, and I said, they're like, oh, I'm like, how much would you like to have your driveway shoveled? They're like, oh yeah, sure. And they say, how much is that? I say $100. That person, this was a defining moment for me. That person didn't bat an eye. They said, okay, go ahead. There were four of us. So instead of shoveling four driveways to make like $25, $20, we were going to shovel one driveway to make that money. And that really kind of taught me that, you know, pricing yourself right, being too low, being too high, being right in the middle, you know, pricing matters. Like people were probably saying when we were going around for $20 a driveway, like, man, these kids, they could charge a whole lot more. And people never say, hey, why don't you charge me more money? They never say that. They just say, okay, thanks, have a nice day, go ahead. I'm gonna give you this money, you're gonna come back again and do it. But it was a defining moment for me. It started off as a joke. I'm just like, okay, worst case, the guy's gonna say is no. I'll just say, yeah, I'm just kidding, we'll do it for $20. But the matter of the fact is that he said yes. I was able to shovel his driveway for $100, and I split that with my friends. Was a defining moment as an entrepreneur in terms of business, and I'll never forget that sometimes you have to push boundaries. Sometimes you as an entrepreneur, you can't stay in the lane. You have to keep moving forward. You have to. I mean, now that I'm like reflecting on all this, it's. I'm not saying, it's a little bit emotional, I would say, that all these things happened that led up to the moment we are in today, but they really have. They really impacted my life in a positive way. You know, my first job, my dad said, you know, the minute you turn 16, you're going to end up paying for things for yourself. You know, everything was my dad kind of, I would say he was a bit hard on me. And I think that it was good to be hard on me because nothing to him was ever given. My dad lived in a one bedroom apartment his whole life, shared it with his sister. He slept on the couch. I mean, and I think that he was hard on me for a reason, because nothing in this world is given. And early on, he would kind of mentor me, I would say. And we would go into different businesses. Like, let's say it was an ice cream shop. He would say, "Hey, what's wrong here? What did the guy do wrong? What did the guy do right?" And we'd always talk about what that business did right. Sometimes if a business closed a couple minutes early and we went and knocked on the door and we went to go into that store and they were closed, and you know, my dad taught me that that was bad business, that it was leaving a bad taste in people's mouth, that's not good for returning revenue, reoccurring revenue. And a lot of that stuff I got from my dad just hanging out with him. And he would explain to me, you know, in terms of different things that we encountered with different businesses that we went to, what was good, what was bad. But he told me when I was 16 to, he's not going to pay for my insurance. He won't pay for my cell phone. I didn't have a cell phone before I was 16 anyways. And so I went and I spent all day, the day I turned 16, it was actually the day after, but the day after I turned 16, I drove around and I applied everywhere, because I'm like, hey, this is the first day that, you know, I'm kind of adulting right now. I'm going to get a job. I didn't stop. I got two interviews. One was at a pizza place. One was at Panera. I chose Panera, and that was my first real job. And was working in food service, and you know, I was only working like 3 days a week, but a lot of it was on the weekends, and I was increasing my time. And at that point in time, I was thinking, the harder I work, the more that I get, and the more hours that I get. You know, it, as you guys know, when you first start a job, you're kind of excited, and things are different. But after a while, it becomes very mundane with the work. Okay, you're in this job role. They expect you to work the same amount of hours every day, the same time slot, and then make sure you do the same type of work. And my job, because I would go after school, would be closing up. So I'd work from like 3:30 p.m., 4 p.m. to like 9 p.m., 10 p.m., something like that, whenever Panera decided to close, whenever we were done. So every day I would go there, you know, I would get things ready. I'd put the cream cheese in the containers. I would clean out the bread. I would slice bagels. I would then do, you know, when we get towards close, I would then run through all the steps to make sure everything was clean. And every day it was the same thing. And after a while, that really gets to me. Is like, hey, I've mastered this job role, and all they offer you is, here's a 25-cent raise. I mean, I literally was making, this was 2000, what year is it? 2002 or 2003. I was 16. It was actually it was like 2001. So 2001, I was 16 years old. I got hired for like $5.25 an hour. I got bumped up to $5.75 an hour. And eventually when I quit there, I was making like over $6 an hour. And you're like, hey, that sounds terrible. But back then that was not that bad. Minimum wage is not as high as it is now. But that job taught me that it really doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter how much they pay you if you're not progressing, if you're not learning anything, if you're not pushing things to the limits. Like for me, I like things to change. I like things to progress. If I show up every day, the business is the same. I make the same amount of money every day, and I'm not progressing, I get extremely frustrated as a person, and it's hard for me to keep going on. And, you know, just because you work really hard at a job doesn't mean that you're doing any better in life. Sure, you're meeting your deadline. Sure, you're required to do certain things, and you have to you know, manage your obligations. You have to meet those obligations, But at the same time, you got to sit back and think about your life. You know, how much time are you wasting here? We don't get much time on this earth. Like, how much time do we have? How much is this going to matter in 20, 30 years? You know, not a whole lot. I mean, it was good for me to get the experience, but staying in that job wasn't going to change my life. I know people today. I also worked at Starbucks, and I was opening in Starbucks, and I was on the weekends. I was working 12-hour shifts downtown Chicago at a restaurant, and I was going to school to be a chef, and I was going to community college and that whole thing. And, you know, I'm not saying that that path is wrong. I just think that it wasn't the path, the right fit for me. You know, I know people, you know, I was working very hard at the time. My parents weren't paying for any college. They weren't paying for anything. And I was kind of thinking to myself, I could either invest this money in school, or I can invest this money into business or into myself. You know, what's going to have the more bang for its buck? And back then, not going to college was like unheard of. Like, I told my grandfather, like, I was telling family members, and I was telling people that are really, really structured, and you have to stay by the rules, and you have to do this. And I was telling people what I was doing, and, you know, they were really proud of me when I was going to school to be a chef. And at the end of the day, I was working in a restaurant, and I was thinking to myself, I'm going to go to school, get all this debt, and these dudes are not making more than $10 an hour. It's going to take me forever. You're making $10 an hour, working 100 hours a week in a restaurant. Is that something that I want to pursue the rest of my life? Is that something that I want to be doing? And the answer, obviously, was no. So I shifted to web development. I started to go to school for that. I literally lasted, you know, in terms of school, I literally lasted like 1 month going to web development school, because they were teaching me like, hey, this is the mouse, and this is how you use this. And, you know, really, I'm like, man, we're way beyond that. I've been using a computer since like kindergarten, you know, and you're trying to tell me how to use a mouse. And that's really when I felt like college wasn't the fit for me in terms of going to chef school and all that. I mean, I was so frustrated with the way things were going that I actually just left all my knives in my locker. I didn't even go back one day. I just said, that's enough. And when I told family members that I wasn't going to college anymore, you know, they were like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, well, you know, I'm just going to work a few years trying to figure this out. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. He's not going back. He's going to be a bum the rest of his life. He's going to be a loser. But when I told my parents I wasn't going to go to school, they didn't say anything. They're just like, okay, fine. That's fine. And I was like, I was expecting them to be a bit hard on me, but you know, I would say my parents have been really, very supportive, because I've done nothing short of the opposite for what you're supposed to do, technically what you're supposed to do in life. And, you know, this path I feel that I took was obviously the harder one, because, you know, it was just nobody was doing that back then. Nobody was not going to school. Nobody was not doing that, but I was investing in myself. So I was still working at Starbucks. I was working at the restaurant downtown, even though I wasn't going to school. But on the trade rides downtown, what I was doing is I was teaching myself web design. So I was reading all these books, and I was just soaking it all up and learning about web design. I was reading books like such as Rich Dad Poor Dad, and just trying to, you know, embrace that. You know, a lot of people, you may have goals, you may have ideas, but sometimes you have to endure the pain. I had to endure the pain of the job. I wasn't an entrepreneur. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start my own thing, but I couldn't, because I didn't have the skills. So when I was taking the train downtown, I was reading books, and I was just investing in myself. And I launched my first company. It was a website hosting company. If you don't know what website hosting is, it's basically I was selling storage. I had a server, and I was selling storage. I was like 17. I was selling storage on this web server, and you have to rent that out to people for them to host their website. So when you see a website online, those are actually just files hosted on a server somewhere. They're just stored. So basically think about, you know, you have like an apartment building and you need tenants. The same thing. So I had a server, I needed website hosting. And one of the big things with this was I started this. I had the server. I had a website. I was ready to go. I then emailed the company that I was renting the server from. I'm like, hey, I got this fancy website up. My server's booming. Things are ready to go. I have zero customers. You know, I put my website online. Where's all my traffic? Where's all the customers? Where's all the orders? And they probably laughed hysterically, like, what is wrong with you? You just launched a website. What's wrong with you? I was so ignorant. I didn't realize. I thought just because you had a website, you were going to get traffic. I don't know why I thought that, but for some reason you thought, hey, I have a website online, you're going to get customers. And that was not the case. I launched a website, had zero customers come through my door or visit my website. And this was another defining moment for me, was like, hey, just because you created something, it doesn't mean anybody's going to see it. It doesn't mean anyone's going to be using it. It doesn't mean you can have the best product in the world, but if nobody sees it, nobody knows about it, nobody is using it, you're not going to be making any money. You're not going to be getting orders. You're not going to be doing anything, you know? And I'm glad these experiences happened, because they made me who I am today. And, you know, reflecting on that right now, it's amazing how far you can go from living in ignorance to actually doing something that you love, and something and working within something that you've built. So, you know, I learned how to start marketing, and I started getting orders, and things were going okay. I then launched with a buddy of mine a website design company for websites, and just because websites were really starting to take off, small businesses were starting to buy them, and you could really, you know, ask anybody, like, hey, do you need a website? You want to do this? And they're like, oh yeah, that's great. However, when we launched the business, it was in 2008. And not really thinking about it at the time, and I wasn't really in the stock market at the time, because, you know, growing up, my parents never taught me anything about the stock market. No one ever taught me about financials, and we'll get to that in a second. But 2008, as you guys know, the bottom fell out. There was a big recession. You know, we incorporated 2008, we started selling websites, and we were marketing, and we were landing some deals and stuff like that. But as time went deeper into 2008, 2009, the people we were talking to, we were literally talking to different people. They said, oh yeah, come back next week. We would literally go back next week, talk to them, and the windows were boarded up. They literally went out of business. They're like, you know, small businesses were going out of business left and right. We had a small business, and we were trying to stay in business, and for the grace of God, I don't know how we made it through. You know, I think if I had a whole family, thankfully we were both single and we were just able to work all day, all night on this. But if I had a whole family and we were relying on this income, I think it would be very sketchy. I mean, I will admit, I did go to bed hungry a few nights. I mean, it was, I mean, I'm speechless that we even made it through. I mean, I don't even have words. But we worked hard, we made it through, and we transitioned into like IT services. And IT services, what I liked about IT services was it was reoccurring revenue, because these people needed IT services to stay in business on a monthly basis. When you're doing websites, when you do a website, that guy's good for 2 to 3 years, maybe even 5 years if he doesn't really change his business that much. So, you know, he's good for 5 years, and that's you're going to get a couple of dollars out of website updates and stuff like that, but it wasn't anything near what you could charge for IT on a monthly basis. And it was because of transitioning into IT services, it really helped me understand that, you know, a lot of business owners, they stay static and then they go out of business. They don't handle pain very well. They don't know, hey, when things aren't going very well, let's pivot, let's transition, let's try something new. A lot of people just do the same thing, and then they go out of business. One thing that I was taught was, you do the same thing, you're gonna get the same results, obviously. So we kind of saw the writing on the wall in terms of income. Hey, we're working really hard here. We'll still do websites, but we're gonna offer IT services as well. So then we started offering IT services, and, you know, that's when things really started to change my life. I mean, you know, the company blew up. You know, I'm still a managing partner in an IT company, you know, and it's a stream of income that I'm currently in, and it's still an amazing business. But through that, it kind of shows you that you always have to change, you always have to adapt. Even though now that I would say the business is successful and it's making, you know, really decent money, we have employees, we have health benefits, and we're able to pay rent for office, we own homes. I mean my life has gone completely 180 by understanding that you need to pivot, you need to keep continuing to get better. But the one thing that I was always interested in is options trading, finance, and it's something I would always read Fortune magazine growing up. It was always something I was interested in, but I was never exposed to any of that. I didn't know anybody outside of that had like a, I mean, they had 401ks and stuff, but no one was actively investing. And I always enjoyed the Wall Street movies. I always enjoyed, you know, looking at the numbers. I always enjoyed that, but I never understood what any of that meant. And I'm like, okay, I need to learn a new skill. I need to look at this stuff. And as an entrepreneur, you have to understand you live or die by learning skills. You know, it depends on what you can offer yourself and what you can offer other people. So I wasn't, at this point, I wasn't afraid to start learning how to trade options and stocks and all that. And obviously when you're going into it, I started looking at the stock market like 2013, 2014 area. Didn't get really serious until late 2014, early 2015. However, you know, as you guys know, as a new trader, you're doing it all wrong. I was looking at stocks. I was trading penny stocks. I traded Forex. And it wasn't until options that things really clicked for me, I can use options in a way kind of like Legos. I've always been good at building things. I've always been good at Legos. That's why I was good at coding websites, because you're building something with your hands and your mind and you're able to figure out puzzles. And that's why things really clicked for me in terms of options, because I said, hey, even if I'm wrong about this strategy, I'm able to adjust this position and probably come out with a profit or break even. So that's kind of why I got into options. And then the main reason, and I know you guys probably heard me say this before, but the main reason that I started a YouTube channel was I was doing a lot of research, and I'm an introvert. I'm not gonna shy away from that. I'm not gonna lie about that. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm an introvert, and through IT and through different things, you know, I was watching a documentary on Warren Buffett and all these people. I'm like, how do they get to be successful? How do they get to do what they need to do? You know, what they want to do. And one of the things Warren Buffett was interesting with me was he said, if you can't communicate with people, you're not gonna really get anywhere. And he said that, you know, hanging on his wall in his office, since he was an introvert as well, or is an introvert, as you could probably tell, people like Elon Musk and those people like us kind of talk kind of weird. But he said that to break out of being an introvert for him, like you have to do something to break out of that, to train your brain to speak to people and do something. So he went to, I forget what it was called, but it was some sort of training program where they made you do all sorts of crazy stuff, where they made you like stand on chairs and scream and get uncomfortable and do uncomfortable things. I mean, I've always been uncomfortable giving speeches, going in front of a class, I mean, interviews, I mean, palms sweaty, you know, I would like, I'd have to go to the bathroom before I had any major meeting, or, I mean, it was, you know, and some people are like, how do you do that? You could just go talk to people and you could just do that. But for me, it was always a struggle. And Warren said that getting a certificate from that place, he's more proud of that certificate than any degree that he has. He hangs that on his wall. If you think about that, Warren Buffett, billionaire, mentor, whatever, you know, entrepreneur, whatever you want to call him, one of the most successful people in the world today, he's more proud of his certificate from this training program on how to break out of being an introvert than he is a college degree. And that really spoke a lot to me in terms of, you know, what I needed to do. So what I did is like, hey, you know, I think that people, you know, I've been getting pretty good at options trading. I've been getting pretty good at trading and looking at these brokerages. And I think that we can help people. And through Us versus Herd, as you guys see today, I mean, we have a really nice community of people, of traders, and we're all bouncing ideas off of each other, and we're making this thing work, right? But in terms of me as an introvert, I mean, like this podcast, I'm nervous about it, but at the same time, I've been doing this for a few years now, where I'm able to. It really helped me with the YouTube channel. If you're an introvert listening to this, start a YouTube channel. But you know, some videos I would talk too fast, and I would get really, really, really nervous before any videos. And I would start videos, and never able to record them until, you know, one day I just said, screw it, we're gonna go all in. And, you know, I got a lot of hate over the years, I got a lot of positivity, but because of the positivity, I was able to push forward. And because I was able to keep doing it, you know, I don't really feel those pains anymore. I'm able to just go on, do a video, I'm able to just talk to people. And I'm not saying I'm cured by any means, but I'm a lot less anxious than I was a few years ago than without it. So, you know, I want to say thank you guys for the support. Thank you guys for listening to this very first podcast. I mean, we're trying some new things here at Us versus Herd, and trying to give you more tools, give you more resources, and give you some insight. So, you know, definitely appreciate you hearing my story. If you guys want to reach out to me, you know how to get in contact with me. You know, Us versus Herd. Look us up on Google, YouTube, wherever, Instagram. We're in Discord. We're on Facebook. So, as always, stay safe, stay green. It's Us versus Herd.